myself for the first time when my children are freaking out because everybody else, it seems like, is getting divorced. And they're like, Mommy and Daddy, are you guys going to get divorced? I can confidently say we made a promise to God. We're not. Like, we're going to work through anything that comes up. And I believe that wholeheartedly. Whereas if they had asked me that before, I don't think I would have had the same answer.
I'm Adira Polite, and this is Then God Moved. Welcome back to the show. I am here with part two of our series with the Maybe God team. I'm here in Houston, sitting across from Julie Mirlet-Courtois. She is the executive producer of the Maybe God podcast. Super excited to have you here.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Welcome to Houston.
Thank you. And thank you for your hospitality. Julie's been awesome since I've been in town. I have known of you as the executive producer of Maybe God, but you have an entire history before that. Honestly, seems like you have been prompted, maybe even prepared for this for years and years and years. So I would love to hear about your experience before Maybe God, maybe even going back to childhood when you realized that you had a passion for storytelling. When did that even first come up?
That's a good question. So first of all, my parents, my mom's American, my dad's French. Mm. And so I immediately had those two cultures and a little bit of a struggle with two very different cultures. I grew up in the Northeast in New England, which is very, you know, very buttoned up. And Well, you went to school in Maine, so you know how it is.
I understand. Not my favorite place.
And then you've got the French culture, which is like, you know, we wear our emotions on our sleeves and, you know, total opposite. And so there was some tension with that early on. When I was 8, my parents got a divorce. And that's when I started really traveling and living between the two countries. Mm. And my dad, the best education he gave me was he took me all over the world. And so when I was 10 years old, he actually married a woman from West Africa. Hmm. We started going to Africa. We fell in love with this little village there and started building a school and had a house there and lived there for a while over the summers and just had the most amazing experiences and exposed to just the complete opposite of my own life at a very early age. He did a lot of business in China, so we spent a lot of time in China and Hong Kong and then obviously all over Europe. So when I'd go back to my little small town in New England, I was just always very confused. But also, like, I felt like I had all these things to share with people about the world and with people my own age. But at that point, like in middle and high school, nobody really wants you telling them about the rest of the world. Mm. But the amazing thing that happened, and this is totally God, I was going into high school and my mom and I were going to see the guidance counselor because it was time to pick what extracurricular activities I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, we were registering late or something. I think I'd been gone all summer because I was always with my dad traveling in the summers. And she said, you know, I'm really sorry. The guidance counselor said, I'm really sorry. You know, I said, art, I want to do art. And she said, there's nothing left except for TV studio. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I am not doing TV studio. Like, I am so shy. Like, I do not want to be in front of the camera. This is absolutely awful. And my mom, who like never really has a strong opinion about things, was like, yes, she'll do it. That's perfect. And I was like, oh,
wow,
just devastated. But so in this small central Massachusetts town, we had a full-on TV studio in the high school. And starting freshman year, I just immediately was like, oh my gosh, I can tell these stories now. Mm. And so it was kind of funny because, you know, I was just so intense already at that age. Sometimes I think I would look for the most dramatic stories in my town, stories of domestic abuse and like really like hard stories. Mm. But I think because of everything I had seen around the world, it just kind of matched sort of, I was just trying to kind of shake people out of their just comfortable lives a little bit from an early age, I guess.
I love that.
So I actually learned more in high school than I did in college as a broadcast journalism major, about television. And, it was awesome. No podcasts at that point. I don't think I'm that old.
Uh-uh.
I don't think there were podcasts. There were not.
For the listener, she doesn't have any wrinkles. Wow. Okay. So you knew from that experience in high school.
Yeah. And I felt so blessed because it was like, I mean, so many people in college had no idea what they wanted to do. And I knew right away, you know, I'm going to keep sharing people's stories. So I went to school in D.C. and immediately, it was my senior year, I started interning with Bob Schieffer and Face the Nation, political talk show.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay. you're telling these stories, but not with a faith element, right? You're not a believer.
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay. Mm-mm. What was the religious background, if any?
So my father grew up in the 1940s and 50s in the Catholic Church in France.
Okay.
So his mom forced him to be an altar boy. And his favorite story to tell me was how he would pee in the holy water. In his Catholic church before church on Sunday.
Wow.
And then get to watch all the old ladies dipping their hands. I still to this day don't know if that's true because my dad was such a storyteller, but he hated religion.
Mm.
And he, you know, taught me that it was brainwashing. It was hard because with so much experience traveling to Africa, I saw this sort of world of priests in Africa that made me a little uncomfortable. I don't really want to get into that, but just like, and then there's a lot of witchcraft going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that confused things for me.
Mm.
And then I remember going to one of my cousin's baptisms in New England. And I remember the priest standing up there saying, if you're not baptized, you're going to go to hell.
Mm.
And as a little girl with a very independent spirit, like that felt like oh, this is just so exclusive.
Mm.
So really from a very early age, I just felt like I had nothing in common with Christians, and that religion, that I was just too smart for religion, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That people in certain places needed it because they had nothing else.
Right.
But I didn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my relationship. However, I prayed a lot.
Hmm.
Starting at 8 years old during my parents' divorce, it was a really, really hard time for me. And I would always start with, God, I don't know if you're there, but if you are, oftentimes it was like, I want my parents to live until this age.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the big thing for me. And I even remember, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was up for this job that I really wanted. I always wanted to work for 60 Minutes.
Hmm.
But I still prayed and said, God, I don't know if you're there. And I don't know if I'm meant to have this job, but, you know, please let it be this job. But I understand if it's not. If that's not what I meant to do, then I understand that. So I had all these sort of natural feelings about God, but mm-hmm. no proof that he existed, no reason to believe, and no faith community that I trusted.
Mm, okay.
That makes sense.
That's very interesting. Do you remember who you were envisioning as you were praying?
I don't think there was. That's a good question. I don't think there was sort of a vision for who I was talking to.
Okay.
And very early on, you know, New England has a lot of, I remember going into little New Age bookshops and stuff.
Mm.
And I was just a seeker from the beginning. I remember buying books when I was like 10 years old about how to like have visions through your dreams and even like flying through the air in your dreams and like all that crazy mm-hmm. stuff. From an early age, I was just drawn to kind of this other realm without knowing what it was and who was in it.
Okay. But there was that curiosity.
Yeah.
After college,
mm-hmm.
where did you go? Was CBS your first stop?
So, yep. I loved my internship in DC, but I knew I wanted to be in New York City. I had an internship one summer there before my senior year, and I was just drawn to New York for all the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a big thing, I think, growing up sort of between two cultures, I never really felt like I fit in anywhere. And I think with New York, like, nobody fits in.
Mm.
Like, you're not meant to fit in New York, and that's what I think drew me to it.
Mm-hmm.
I got a job straight out of college working the overnight shift for what was then the early show. It's now This Morning with Gayle King.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the first show I worked on, doing the overnight shift. And a month later, 9/11 happened.
Oh.
And I was sitting there and I was the first person to get the call from an eyewitness who's like, you've got to put me on the air right now because I've got to tell you what I'm seeing right now, before there were any images or anything. Yeah, it was pretty wild. And at that point, everybody left New York. Everybody left.
Hmm.
And it was very clear to me, like, if this is the business you want to be in, you're not leaving.
Mm.
In fact, you're probably going to be here for a week straight and not take a shower. Are you cool with that?
And you're like, yep.
Yep, I am. So, yeah. And then it was the Iraq War was next. Mm. I mean, it was just pretty intense time to be in news, but I absolutely loved it. And I never wanted to leave.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think that your comfort or your almost like familiarity with this difficulty was because of what you'd seen as a kid traveling around and being exposed to things that most white Americans had never seen?
Yeah, I think most of my life I've felt uncomfortable, honestly. Like I said, my parents getting divorced when I was 8 years old, like forced me to grow, and seeing things that I was not supposed to see.
Mm.
And I never had any sort of stable emotional guide through it. And so I was really forced to kind of figure it out on my own. And I didn't do it well. And so I think for some reason, I just have always been drawn to, sounds so wrong, but like discomfort. And, you know, now I'm much more comfortable with my life and myself. Yeah. But I still think I'm drawn to those like really vulnerable conversations and situations.
We're alike in that way. I also love tough stories because I'm like, everyone needs to hear this.
Exactly.
I also run towards the disaster. I get it. So you're at CBS, you're telling these tough stories, and you were there for 8 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. And at what point did you transition?
So if you've watched, what is that show with Jennifer Aniston called?
The Morning Show.
The Morning Show. There you go. It is truly that crazy. My boss at CBS, who is just the most stand-up person I met in all of my time in broadcast news, he was let go because we weren't beating the Today Show, right? And so every few years, we're like, gotta go. And so when he left, and then this woman came in who was, I don't know how to say it, she was just a crazy person. And at that point, I had started dating a man who is now my husband, and he hated New York City. He didn't want to live in New York City anymore. He was just done. He actually wanted to move to Texas. And on our first date, he's like, I'm moving to Texas at some point. And I'm like, well, I'm never leaving my rent-controlled Upper West Side apartment, so this is not going to work. And I'm definitely not moving to Texas anytime in my lifetime. But he was just, we were a year into dating. He had had enough of New York. And, you know, this boss comes in my life, and I got a job offer to move to Chicago and work for Oprah. And the funny thing is, I didn't grow up watching Oprah. I wasn't a fangirl of any sort, but I said to my now husband, you want to try Chicago? And he was like, let's do it. Let's try it. And so we moved together a year into our relationship, and ended up staying in Chicago for 8 years.
Wow. Okay. So what was his religious background or his beliefs at that point?
He grew up with an atheist father, and his mother, I think, would take them to church once in a while, Methodist church. But he had no faith.
Okay.
And neither did I.
Okay. Okay. So y'all moved to Chicago. Where in Oprah's career was this? How long did
the show? So this is kind of funny because we move our entire lives to Chicago, and a week into the job, I find out she's ending the show.
Oh.
In 3 seasons.
Meaning 3 years?
It was just 3 years. Okay. Yeah. So I was like, well, okay. I guess we're not going to be here for long. Mm-hmm. I did the last 3 years of the Oprah show, and then I helped launch 3 shows at the OWN network,
okay,
which is why I ended up being there for 8 years.
Got it. Okay. How do you end up in Texas where you said you were never going to come?
So my husband's company is based in Texas, in Houston. His brother and his brother's family live in Houston.
Okay.
And so we would come down to Houston once in a while, but I hated it. I hated it. His, my brother and sister-in-law are out in the suburbs. I'd never seen the nice parts of Houston, you know, come for Thanksgiving. And I was like, this place is terrible. I'm never moving here. And his company was, his bosses would always joke like, you know, just come to Houston. And I was like, no, not happening. And it was, when I had my second child in Chicago, I went back after my maternity leave and I was traveling immediately. And Oprah at this point was just about to wrap up and close down the studio in Chicago. And anybody wanted to continue with her would have to go to LA. And I was not going to raise my kids in LA. It's just something about you when you become a mom, you're just like willing to do things you never thought. And at that point, my career had been like everything to me, but it was starting to, my priorities were starting to shift a little bit. And I realized as my kids got older, I wanted to be around in their lives. And then if I either moved back to New York or to LA, that was just a very different path. So while I was at Oprah, though, I was exposed to a ton of psychics and all sorts of like new age stuff. And again, like I was saying, I was always a seeker. And so I remember this one day, my first sort of entry into that world, Oprah just sends us a note to the producers and she's like, hey, there's this woman. She's this amazing psychic. She's in from Denver. She wants to kind of show us what she's got. And so if you're interested, head to the screening room where we had our own little movie theater where we'd watch like the Oscar winners before we interview the actors and stuff. So we're like, we get our popcorn and I'm like, let's go meet this psychic. And she started speaking directly to me and saying things that she could only know. And it was just this, it was this moment of, you know, and I know doing an episode for the podcast on psychics and New Age stuff, so I know how dangerous that can be. But I think God found a way to reach me through this woman. You know, my prayers, God, if you can, if you're there, he proved to me like he is there. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the first step for me. And so then I started doing a lot of sessions with this woman. I found, I mean, I did all past life regression, hypnosis, like all this crazy stuff. And it was actually this psychic one day around the same time that I'd had my second child. We were in a session and she whispers in my ear, and I hadn't told her anything. And she said, you need to go home tonight and tell your husband you're moving to Texas. And I was just,
what?
I was like, what is going on here? And, you know, she kind of explained to me what she was feeling. And I actually did. I went home that night and I told my husband, Ryan, like, okay, we're going to Texas.
Mm.
I don't know. In that moment, I just saw this path for me in Texas, and it made absolutely no sense whatsoever. And God was like laying out breadcrumbs too. Like I actually went and for Oprah interviewed an actress who was living, you know, outside of Dallas, and that was, and then she and I became good friends, and she started actually introducing me a little bit to the Christian faith, and there were all these little kind of signs. And she actually, this is, I hadn't thought about this in a while, but you know, a week after I had interviewed her, she called me and she said, hey, I'd love for you to produce a movie with me. Would you produce this movie with me? And so that was the first time I thought, wait, maybe I could still do what I love to do in Texas. So there are all these sort of little signs that like, maybe my life and my career doesn't have to end if I move to Texas. Sorry, that was a long convoluted way to get there.
No, makes sense. God, essentially, but you don't know it yet, gets you here.
Yeah.
So you moved to Texas with your family, your husband, your two kids. And what are you doing?
So at that point, I'm just trying to get settled. And that's the first time that I'm a stay-at-home mom, which is really hard for me. Yeah, I've just always loved my work and poured myself into my work. And it's been, you know, not always rightfully so, but it's been very much like my identity and my purpose. So when I moved down here, my colleagues told me, that is career suicide. You should not go to Houston. And I said, no, it's going to work out. I'm going to find this job that I'm going to love, and it's going to allow me to keep doing what I'm good at. And I'm not going to have to sacrifice my family for it. I'm still going to have time with my children. And every, even like all the working moms I knew were like, that's crazy. Like we all say that, but that's never going to happen. So forget about it. But as I got down here, I just started to see like all these things line up exactly how I had hoped. And again, it was just like God making himself so real to me. And one day I was having lunch with a new friend and the kids were playing. And she told me about this church school that her kids went to. And she's like, you know, you really should check that school out for your daughter. And so on the way home, drove by it and I just had this like feeling that I need to pull in. I need to pull into the parking lot right now. Random weekday, you know, I had my 6-month-old then in the back seat. And I just start wandering into this huge traditional church, which makes no sense, and had the most like amazing feeling of like home and like peace come over me. And I just showed up in the admissions office for the school, start talking to the woman behind the desk. And, you know, she's like, oh, there's a long wait list, but we can get you on the wait list. And I'm like, great. And we start talking. Turns out that we have a son by the exact same name, Charlie Scott. And so we just ended up talking for like an hour. And then I'm thinking to myself, gosh, you know, wouldn't it be sweet if my kids had a church to go to? Like, that must be good for kids to go to church, right? and like, wouldn't that maybe help me move up the wait list?
If I start going to this church.
And I was like, oh, can you tell me about your service times and stuff? And she gives me this little card, which I still have, like her business card. And at the back, she writes a bunch of service times, but she circles the Story Church because the Story Church had been planted in their gym of this church. Okay. And she circles those church times. And she's like, this is the really like casual one for people who like to wear jeans. And, you know, and I'm like, that sounds great. And so I asked my husband, I'm like, you want to check out a church? And he's like, sure, why not? And so we showed up the Story Church, both non-believers, and within a few months we were both Christians.
A few months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what happened? What?
Yeah, it's actually crazy to think about too, because we walk in and people's hands are raised and they're seeing nothing but the blood of Jesus, and we're like, what is this? And it's like all of my worst like ideas of what Texas Christians are, and I'm like, what's going on? But you know, Eric got up to preach, and he preaches to skeptics, and to like people who, you know, he preaches to the intellectual side of the faith. And so, and my husband's like such an academic, and he was like so interested, right? So he got really curious, and so it was just enough to like keep us coming back. And then Eric's wife, Pastor Giovanna, she found out what I do. And so she took me out to coffee, and she was like, hey, you know, we really could use some help with some videos. And I was not, I mean, it was just so funny because I was not a believer at all, but she was like, we just, you know, maybe some testimony videos, and we need a video on Eric's story. And I'm like, okay, why not? And at that point, it was the first sort of production I had done on my own since like high school, really. And so it forced me to suddenly make all these contacts in the production world and find the camera people and do all these things that I, you know, it was almost like it was building up my confidence. Like, I don't need this whole organization behind me to be able to do what I do. And so I started with Eric's testimony. So his testimony is really encouraging. And then I started interviewing all these people that go to the church who were very, very vulnerable about suicide attempts or all sorts of things, you name it. And I couldn't believe the vulnerability of these people. And there's something like special about these Christians that I was interviewing. And there were some things really special about Eric's story, and it all just spoke to me. And then, you know, just all of the pieces falling into place as far as like, you know, my work, finding something I was passionate about here in Texas, watching those videos play in a church on Sunday that I had produced. All of it, it just suddenly I'm sobbing in church on Sunday, and I'm having just these amazing encounters with God. And within a few months, I was a Christian. I was being baptized in the church.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And your husband, was his journey more intellectual? So,
no, with my husband, one of the testimony videos I'd done was about a man who does prison ministry. And for some reason, I was like, Ryan's my husband's name. Like, you've got to do this prison ministry. I don't know why. I was just like, you must go to prison with these men. Like, you have to do this.
Wow.
And he's like, okay, sure. Sounds interesting. So he, and I remember that whole first weekend, you don't hear from them. They're gone in prison. Their phones are like with the guards or something. I didn't hear from him, but I remember just feeling like, oh my gosh, something transformational is happening in my husband right now. And there's a lot of trauma in his life because he was in a car accident when he was 16, and his best friend died next to him, and he was the driver of the car. So he was responsible for it. And that was the first time he got up in front of a group of prisoners and shared his testimony. And sure enough, there was something, just he literally walked out of that prison a Christian. And it was incredible. So, and I realize now, because we have so many couples of the story where it's like one person believes and one doesn't, and how hard that is, and it can last for years and years. So I realize how lucky we are that within a month or two of each other, we both became Christians.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
How did that affect your marriage? Is it even the same marriage now?
Oh, no, it's not the same marriage at all. Ryan and I both dealt with so much trauma in our past, a lot of childhood trauma. You know, both of us come from broken families. Neither one of us had healthy role models for, you know, how to treat each other in a relationship. And so when we first got married, you know, we brought just so much brokenness to the relationship, each of us. And I think we expected the other person to fix that, right? Okay, now I'm whole, now we're whole, and we're going to fix this, you know, for each other. But the truth is, I couldn't fix him, and he couldn't fix me. That's not how it works. And so when we learned about how much God loves us and how much he's forgiven us for our past, and we started to see God really setting us free from our brokenness and from the trauma, and we realized that God was the only one who could really help us with that brokenness, that's when we realized how to love each other the right way and what to expect of each other. And so, yeah, it's just been so beautiful to learn to love each other sacrificially, even when we don't like each other. Because when you have kids at some point, you're like, I can't, you know, do this anymore with you. We still always, you know, put God at the center of our relationship and pray together. And we always, you know, even when we have disputes, come back together. And again, just putting God at the center of your relationship. I don't know how any married couple survives without that, honestly. now that I've seen it both ways. Yeah. It's just been such a game changer for us. And it doesn't mean that we don't fight and argue and all that same sort of brokenness doesn't come into the picture sometimes, mm-hmm. but we like can look at each other as children of God and love each other even through, you know, the hurt and the pain. Mm-hmm. And it's changed absolutely everything. And we had wanted and aspired to break this cycle of divorce in our families and mm-hmm. of bad parenting. And honestly, we didn't have the tools to. Mm-hmm. And now for the first time, I'm, you know, when my children are freaking out because everybody else, it seems like, is getting divorced. And they're like, Mommy and Daddy, are you guys going to get divorced? I can confidently say we made a promise to God and we're not. Like, we're going to work through anything that comes up. And I believe that wholeheartedly. Whereas if they had asked me that before, I don't think I would have had the same answer.
Mm. Wow. That's really powerful. So at this point, you are still making videos for the Story Church.
At this point, I'm working part-time for the Story.
Okay.
And I don't think we really knew what to do with me at a church. And at that point, my heart was really focused on, I realized how wrong I had it about Christians and mm-hmm. who Christians were and who Jesus was. Now I just had this desire to like clarify mm-hmm. for the old me and for everybody who doesn't understand who Christians really are. Mm-hmm. So it just, you know, that's kind of what was working in my heart. At the same time, I was constantly consuming podcasts. And, you know, I'd take walks at night with my girlfriends and we'd talk about all the different parenting things we had learned on podcasts or news of the day or whatever it was. And it just kind of clicked like, gosh, there's a huge audience on podcasts that may have never heard the gospel before, and this mm-hmm. might be the perfect way to reach them because they're not going to step into church on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And Eric's not a podcast listener. So mm-hmm. He was like, I don't know about this podcast thing. But then other people were approaching him and like, you have to do a podcast. Mm-hmm. And like all these, and then somebody came to us and said, we're going to buy all the podcast gear for you because you guys have to do a podcast. And wow. Suddenly, you know, that's how we ended up doing Maybe God.
Wow.
Yeah. But we've just really evolved into this podcast that is reaching people who have either stepped away from church, stepped away from faith, but yet they're still trying to figure out like, who is this God? Mm. And we're, you know, really helping them work through some of their deepest doubts and faith struggles. And instead of doing it, you know, with, hey, let's put a pastor and an atheist together and have them argue it out, we're telling people stories. Mm. And very much like you, showing how God is moving in people's lives mm-hmm. and what we can learn from that. And that's where the title comes from too. You know, maybe just getting people to consider that maybe God is working in their lives.
Which stories have struck you the most?
The near-death experience episode. Mm-hmm. Those really shook me because they're testimonies of people who claim to have met God. Mm-hmm. And one man who claims that he went to hell. And the pastor, who's sort of our expert voice in that, he's out of Austin, Texas. He's written an amazing book called Imagine Heaven. It's like a New York Times bestseller. I highly recommend it. The way he talks biblically about near-death experiences, and then we were able to weave in these testimonies that really aligned with what he was saying. It just, to me, it made God so real and so relatable. Mm. Hearing these testimonies. So that was a big one. And we've had people come back to church. They'll walk into the Story and say, because of those episodes, I've come back to my faith and I'm here today at church. And so that's been incredible.
I don't know if it's still in the intro. Y'all have made changes. But yeah. My favorite feature of most episodes has always been the intro where y'all edit together these clips of people saying a few things that people are struggling with and hard things that have happened. And then it ends with this one person saying, but God is still good. And I feel like that's the heart of the ministry, pointing people towards, even in the midst of the worst things, but God is still good. Do you feel that God has revealed himself to you in that way, more so as you've done this work?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of an indirect way of answering that question, but recently, because we're working on the marketing of a documentary that we've done, mm-hmm. and there's a man that I've hired to help me with distribution and marketing, mm-hmm. and he said, how would this film have been different if you had made this film before becoming a Christian? Mm. And I was like, oh my gosh, it would be so different. You know, the immigrants would be victims. Mm. There would be no hope. We'd be the saviors that need to come in and save them. Mm. Now, as a Christian making this film, it's like a love story between these Christians who have struggled so much, but who are like these amazing witnesses to God working in their lives mm-hmm. and what we can like gain from those stories. And so I think in general, this hopefulness in all these stories, even the hardest ones. Mm. You know, what I feel about all these stories that we're sharing now as opposed to the stories that I shared before.
How did the idea for this documentary come about?
It was from an episode. So we did an episode, one of Eric's catchy titles, Can Loving Illegals Save Your Souls?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like a three-parter? Maybe?
It was a two-part episode. Okay. And so part two featured this pastor out of San Antonio who I was actually introduced to him by one of my friends from Oprah who works for CNN. CNN interviewed him and he ended up on the cutting room floor because they're like, we don't know what to do with this amazing Christian guy who's like, you know, helping all these people. But she's like, I think you'd really like him. So drove out to San Antonio, interviewed him for the podcast and was just blown away by his ministry and by his humility and by the stories, I mean, just surrounded by stories. And then, you know, his big thing is what people don't realize is that 80% of these people moving across the border are evangelical Christians in the true sense of the word. And so I immediately was drawn to this tension. Everything we do in Maybe God, I think we're trying to kind of push both sides on things. Mm-hmm. But I love the fact I'm like, okay, Christians don't realize that these are their brothers and sisters in Christ.
Yes, yes.
And on the other side, you know, the sort of, you know, really secular side sees them as victims, mm-hmm. sees them as people who have no hope, offer no hope. Mm. But yet I was seeing them come into these American communities and help transform the faith of these church communities. Mm. And I was like, gosh, there's this, you know, whole other side to these immigrants that the media has completely ignored. Mm-hmm. So once we did the episode and it came out, some of the feedback we got was, and you know, of course there were a few people that wrote and it's like they're not following the laws and you know, some angry emails for sure, which if you watch, when hopefully you watch the documentary, you'll see we don't address the politics at all. This is not about open border or wall. Like, we're not advocating for any of that. There are so many asylum seekers already in our midst, and how are we going to deal with these neighbors? Mm-hmm. That's all we're talking about. But anyway, a lot of people were really changed by that episode. We got so many people who were like, I had no idea that, you know, this was their experience. Asylum seekers are not actually here illegally. They're here totally legally. Mm-hmm. All these different things. And so it just started getting that feedback. And it was at like 3 a.m. I woke up and I couldn't sleep for hours. And I just felt God calling me. I just heard, you have to do more. And you need to go back to video.
Wow.
And I was like, no, God, there's no way. Like, this pastor in San Antonio is the most humble dude you've ever met. He's not going to be on camera. It's not going to happen. And these immigrants who've been through so much trauma, they're not going to want to share their stories. Mm. They're terrified for their lives. And I have this podcast and this full-time job at the church. There's no way I can make time in my life to do a documentary. Mm-hmm. But doors just kept like flying open. And everybody was like, yes, 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 yes. And so I was like, okay. And it was one of the most terrifying. It is, has been the most terrifying thing I've done in my entire career.
Hmm.
But we, through that, my trust in God has grown immensely. And to just say, okay, God, I have no idea where you're bringing this, but I trust you,
yeah,
has been, you know, a huge leap of faith for me.
Yeah. It's always awesome to see what God does with a tiny piece of obedience. Like, you say yes to one thing and he just makes it all happen.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I mean, we'll see. It still has to be distributed and everything. But I mean, the first year of it, I lived in fear.
Mm.
Like, I was, you know, and so I sometimes I'm like, God, you really have patience with me. Because I was just like, I don't see it yet. I don't see your vision.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this going? Like, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. And now that I see the vision kind of starting to play out, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. What's your hope for the documentary?
Just as many people see it as possible. Yeah. And that, people in the secular world start to see beautiful Christians, both the asylum seekers and the Christians, American Christians who are helping these people, what it means to live, you know, the way Jesus wants us to live.
Yes.
And then on the other side, I want Christians to see that, again, these are their brothers and sisters in Christ, and we can't just ignore them. And they have a lot to teach us. I recently went through something with my son where he was in the hospital overnight, and I have never prayed so hard in my life. And I couldn't help thinking about the women that I had been featuring in this documentary and following, and what they had been through when they were separated from their children, and just how they're praying and fasting and their constant trust in God that everybody else, or all the Americans around them, doubted. They're like, no, you shouldn't trust that this is going to work out, because we don't see any reason to believe this is going to work out. That just sort of, their testimony is just so like ingrained in me now. And I just felt so grateful in that moment that I had that to hold on to. And so I want so many other people to hear their stories and witness their faith, because it's incredible.
Mm-hmm. So it's challenged your own personal faith, you would say?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. I think most people who are around these women, in particular in the documentary, including this pastor in San Antonio, they actually have a nickname for him that means pastor of little faith, man of mm-hmm. little faith, because mm-hmm. his faith compared to their faith is nothing. And that's how I feel mm-hmm. when I'm around them too, you know? And I used to see that as so naive before mm-hmm. I became a Christian.
That
trust, yes. Like, what's wrong with you? Yeah. Like, what, why would you trust this being that has, like, you've had so much heartache and trauma in your life. Mm. Why do you trust, you know, this God still? Mm. And now that I'm a believer, I think that's the most beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Having been able to follow these women for now 3 years, I do see how God is, there have been some miraculous things happening, you know, past all the trauma and the heartache.
Yeah. Are there other stories that you want to tell in this form now that you've gotten your feet wet?
That's a good question. I know I want to keep going with it, but this is the trusting in God part of me. That's like, I'm being held back. I'm holding myself back a little bit, 'cause I'm like, I'm going to wait and see how this does.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll worry. So I don't think I'm letting my brain go there yet, 'cause I'm still like, I want to see where this goes. But the hope is that, enough people watch it and love it, that we have a platform that we can continue to share more stories for sure. I don't know yet what would be next, though.
Okay. I have some ideas, but...
I would love to hear them.
Yeah. I'm thinking of the creatives, both non-believers and believers, who probably just look to you and admire you. I mean, Oprah, that's huge. CBS, that's huge. How do you think of ambition now as a believer? How would you look to your younger self who's striving for this career in New York? And that wasn't a bad thing. You were seeking to do good. But how do you think about work and vocation now that you know Jesus?
That's such an interesting question that I've never considered. I mean, work has been one of my idols, right, my mm-hmm. whole life. And that ambition in some ways was really destructive in my 20s, and in some ways kind of saved me in my 20s.
Mm.
Living in New York City, you know, I worked hard and I partied really hard too. That was the world I was a part of. And I think I was healing from a lot of the trauma of my childhood and making very, very bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
But my work kept me focused. It's the one thing keeping me on a straight path, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, now I have to work to keep it in. And I do feel like everything that I did then, because I was so ambitious and was able to, I feel like, learn from some of the greatest people in the business, I feel like now I can use that for God's kingdom. And I don't think that was an accident.
Yeah.
So I don't look back on sort of my drive and my ambition negatively at all. But now, obviously, as a mom, I do feel like I have to keep that in check, because my work can consume me. I can go home and I'm thinking about these stories, and what about my kids are talking to me about at the dinner table, or something like that, which I think all working parents have the same problem. But I do have to keep it in check a little bit and not let it consume me too much. But as far as ambition, I mean, I just think I've just learned to know when it's the Holy Spirit fire in me or when it's not.
Yeah.
You know, I know very clearly now when it is the Holy Spirit that's like literally just feels like I'm set on fire, like go for it. And then I'm just getting to that super ambitious, like must accomplish this task. And sometimes when I'm running up against a wall, that's the thing that I wish I knew too. And now I realize as a Christian, like when I'm running up against a wall and like, it's not working out. And I'm keep pushing.
Yeah.
Like now I know, just let it go.
Mm.
Like there's a reason it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
Just let it go.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers your question. It's a really good question.
It does. Thank you so much. I deeply admire you. I think I told you that the first time we talked. You do really, really good work.
Thank you. Seriously,
everyone listening should go listen to Maybe God. The questions that y'all ask, the stories that y'all tell, it's God's work and it's really important. So thank you.
You're making me teary. If any of your listeners have questions, like doubts, like topics they want us to cover too, I mean, I love hearing from people.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, a story to tell or just a deep sort of doubt about something.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually, if it's like on somebody's heart, it's on a lot of people's hearts. And so that's what we're trying to do, is definitely reach people with those that don't feel like they can speak up in their churches or, you know, just need another place to kind of hear from.
Yeah. People can reach you at maybegodpod.com and at maybegodpod on Instagram, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Julie, for coming on.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for all your work. I mean, everything that you're doing is so amazing.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to see what's next, and whether it's film or books or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
Thank you.